Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye and WisPolitics look at this week in the Capitol and politics. First, WisEye was there. Very interesting. I sat down 1 year later after Foxconn was announced with a Racine County executive. Yes, he still thinks it's going to be fully developed. Yes, he has trust in Foxconn executives. Then I asked, what about the eight Democrats who'd like to kill who oppose and Mr. Flynn would like to kill the Foxconn deal? He talked about that. Thanks to TMJ4 for excerpts from the last night's Democratic debate. And one of the five Republicans running to replace Speaker Paul Ryan in the 1st Congressional District talks about, and WisEye was there, buying $50,000 worth of AR-15 rifles, night vision goggles, body armor, and drones, and donating them to two Texas sheriff's departments on the Mexican border. WisEye was there.
We are in the political silly season. I think that's part of what's going on there. If one of those candidates won, I really believe that they would look at the merits of what this means for southeastern Wisconsin, Racine County. We lost a lot of manufacturing in the 70s and 80s and 90s. It's coming back. We'll be a technology hub. The great thing about this is Racine County is ascending because of this project. The transportation, I-94, I mean, Kenosha County, our neighbors to the south, Milwaukee County to our neighbors to the north, they got their freeway system done. Racine County didn't. We're gonna have a great freeway system because of this project. We have 13,000 jobs up directly to Foxconn, potentially a 1.6 to 1.9 multiplier. You're looking at 30,000 jobs.
First of all, it was the worst deal on record. Scott Walker, any of us on stage, anybody in the audience here, frankly, could have cut a better deal than Scott Walker did. It is part of state law. I believe that it's going to be very difficult to stop it. But I do believe we can renegotiate several issues. First one is we for $5 billion, $4 billion, we should be able to compel that company to be the best corporate partner in Wisconsin. Living wages, good fringe benefits. We also have to make sure we can renegotiate this deal as it relates to environmental issues.
I'm the only one on this podium that knows how to stop the Foxconn deal, and that's a central part of my campaign. It's a crooked deal.
And a lot of people don't realize that in Wisconsin right now on the books, we have a criminal abortion ban that criminalizes women and doctors and makes abortion illegal. As governor, I will continue to work to overturn that cruel law, but I've also pledged that I will pardon anyone charged under that law. We are not going to let our daughters go back to a time when abortion was illegal and a crime, and women could not get the health care they need.
It used to be that the motto, protect and serve, was on every squad car. Now the philosophy seems to be intimidate and control. Those are sturdy legs that the new Jim Crow stands on. It is our duty as a state to cut the legs out from underneath that structure if we are going to create economic, social, and racial justice in our state.
And I would put in place $15 an hour, phase it in, follow some of the other states around us. For example, Minnesota did. Saw a booming economy in Minnesota. When you think about people that are at the minimum wage, they spend everything they have, which spurs our economy.
How do we get people to stay healthy, be healthy, and do healthy behaviors if we throw in a giant stick against them, which is this huge deductible? Folks not getting care because they can't afford it, because they have a $17,000 family deductible on a bronze plan through the ACA, and they make 50 grand. They are not going to pay the bill, or they're not going to get the care, one of the two. It's a zero-win situation.
Your website says you gave $50,000 worth of AR-15s and drones and body armor to two Texas sheriffs.
I went down to the border a number of times, and a couple of border sheriffs
took me out and showed me the border, showed me what was really going on. I watched some dash cam video of them chasing some folks, and I saw one of the officers get out just with his sidearm, and I said to him, to the officer, to the deputy, why did you do that? Why didn't you get out and engage him with a rifle? And he said, well, we don't all have rifles. So we donated the 25 AR-15s, a pile of ammo, and like you said, drones and night vision equipment, because we want them to come home every day.
I want to lead the show with 2nd District Democrat Mark Buchan, opening last week by calling to abolish ICE. And before you and I get into all, everything that's happened since then, let's listen to less than a minute of Mr. Congressman Buchan at that press conference.
ICE has to be able to get confidences of the communities they go into. Right now, because they're seen as a deportation, the president's police force, the president's deportation force, the agency can't operate like they need to because the brand has been broken by the president's directives to them. So that's the real problem. I mean, I think, you know, some people are saying you got to reform it, get rid of the president's abuses. I'm just afraid that, you know, the minute that ICE jacket comes out now, you can't accomplish what you need to because of how the agency's been misused by the president. So it's not a administrative knock at ICE. It's the direction that they're taking, which has been the president's direction.
JR, I'm tempted to say this is a situation where you ought to be careful what you ask for. Because Buchan did sponsor the bill, and now we're going to talk a little bit about how it might be a potential vote. It would create a commission to develop a process to shut down ICE, recommend which other agencies would take over its responsibilities. But you and I polled this week, and Senator Baldwin is against it, Democratic Senator Baldwin.
So she'd like to see some changes, but no, doesn't want to see the agency shut down.
Ron Kind is against it. I interviewed the two Democrats in Sean Duffy's district. They're against it. I interviewed Kathy Myers. She said, I don't want to abolish ICE. I just want to fold it over under DOJ. Randy Bryce, Myers' opponent in the August 14th primary in the first, said, yeah, abolish ICE. And then Gary George, running against Gwen Moore, says, abolish ICE. So, but I've done all the talking. Lay out what has happened since he came out with this.
Republicans sought to kind of put the Democrats on record and put this bill to a vote on the floor. I saw late last night, I read it very closely, but Mark Buchan saying, well, he's going to vote no on the bill now because they're just playing play games with it. They're not having an honest discussion about the bill. This has kind of become an issue for the Democratic base about it's grown out of the immigrant issue on the border where families are being split apart or where it had been being split apart, that this is going a step too far. This was kind of an initial reaction from some Democrats, but now others are kind of going, wait a second, this is going too far. And there's a base play here, because there are a lot of primaries right now. There's also a, okay, get beyond the primaries. What does this mean for Democrats in the general election come November? And I think some Democrats are kind of going, well, this is not going to play well with people in the middle, even if you explain what they're trying to do. That ensure people are not trying to pull back on border enforcement, just change the agency doing it or rearrange things. People in the middle are kind of go, it's, wait, the president's talking about abolishing ICE and you're attacking like law enforcement officers. That's an issue that gives Donald Trump kind of a golden opportunity to
well, and Democrats. And the president tweeted, Democrats calling to abolish ICE threaten national security. This is the specter of we're going to be overrun. I talked to one Republican candidate in the 1st Congressional District who said, if that's the way Mr. Buchan feels, he should never lock his house, never lock the front or back doors 24/7.
You know, and you've got PolitiFact saying that this would not mean the end of border enforcement, that ICE is not in charge of border enforcement. It's about once you're actually here that they enforce laws, that there's border patrol. But that aside, those details get lost in discussion like this when people can grasp onto the simple argument of this would weaken national security or border enforcement, even if the details aren't quite jiving with that statement.
Okay, but next week we have a potential vote in the U.S. House on Mr. Buchan's bill that he's going to vote against. And this is nothing but the president and the GOP leader seeing a wedge opportunity.
They want to put the Democrats on record, force them to say, you know, either you're with the base that wants this or you're with others. Like, where are you on this issue? So it's kind of, you know, classic move by the leadership.
Did Buchan harm his party? Buchan, who's regarded as a sound strategist, did he hurt his party by taking the lead on this?
It's still a little early to say how this is going to play out. I'm waiting to get more reaction to that. I'll put it that way.
Okay. New topic. The prison populations and sentencing laws have now become central to the debate over who's our next governor. I mean, you have some factual situations. You have the prisons in Waupun and Green Bay built in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. We're going to close the two juvenile prisons up north. And you have prison populations that are still overcrowded. So the one central issue that I've been asking candidates about, do you support a new state prison? But now you have Democrats saying things like, let's pardon those convicted of nonviolent marijuana crimes, let's legalize marijuana, let's release some inmates early, let's slow or end a return to prison for probation or parole violations. This came up heavily last night in the debate. Do you want to talk about that, please?
Several of the candidates for governor and Democratic side have said they want to cut the prison population in half, I think around 23 or 24,000.
We're July 6th, 23,432 adult inmates.
Cut in half. Now, what I don't have for sure, like exactly when, how would you do that? Would you walk in on day one and let certain people go? Would you change the law that going forward you would look for a gradual drawdown? So during the debate last night, Charles Benson pressed Kel DeRoyce, for example, well, you say, well, release nonviolent offenders. DOC says that two-thirds of people who are in prison are violent. So who do you want to let go? She didn't really answer that question, so it was more about, you know, providing adequate safety, but also providing services so that people, when they do get out, they transfer back in society and have a way to avoid going back. This is going to be an issue for Democrats if they get through, much like ICE, where you can have a very intelligent discussion about prison population and how, as the Democrats keep pointing out, we lock up twice as many people as Minnesota does, even though we have roughly the same population, similar demographics. What is going on that we're doing this versus what they're doing? That we're spending more money on the corrections we are in the university system, that there's a problem there. But for the average person, it's a simple 30-second ad of they want to let violent offenders go. How do you address that? It's going to be a challenge for Democrats if they do embrace this November election.
And the stats are very interesting. As I said, the DOC, the Department of Corrections, website says, as of July 6th, there were 23,432 adult inmates. But let's go beyond that. 93% of them were male. Of the male adult inmates, 43% were African-American, 9% Hispanic. And if you look up Wisconsin's demographics, our African-American population is less than 7%, which allowed Malin Mitchell to say, look, we lock up more at last night's debate. We lock up more African-Americans than any other state. This has got to change. You were going to say something.
Well, one, he said, you know, I'm, you know, raising two black children in the state. It's the worst place to do it, making the point driving home for him about what that means. And then two, there is an argument from the Democrats of something's amiss, that our policies are out of whack. Remember, truth in sentencing passed in the late 1990s before I got here. It was meant to take away the opportunity for somebody to be sentenced to 10 years and only serve two. They wanted you to actually serve what you were sentenced to. We, though, have gotten to a point now where people are questioning, have we missed the point of locking people up for too long and not address other issues with this?
And who was one of the chief sponsors of Truth and Sentencing?
Scott Walker, my state lawmaker.
Then State Representative Scott Walker. The Attorney General took kind of the lead on this and said, I'm stunned at the Democrats' irresponsible proposals, and then injected the idea of using private prisons, maybe an alternative to building a new one. There's no reason why a privately operated prison couldn't be a safe place to house and rehabilitate offenders. You and I know that when you talk about private prisons, there's two issues, in Wisconsin or out of Wisconsin. And decades ago, we brought back all the inmates that had been out of state.
So we both lived through the debate over Staley Prison.
Yes.
Both lived through the debate over sending people to private prisons
and
in
bringing
Tennessee.
Them back. Yes.
Remember, the issue with Staley was a private company built this prison without really...
CCI built it.
Without the state saying it would buy it, but they assumed the state would. The state got a hold of it, had to spend many dollars to upgrade the prison and make it, you know, basically acceptable.
Yeah.
There was that problem. When you take inmates away from their family structure, you make it more difficult on them on reentry. I mean, that's one of the conclusions about sending people out of state, right? So same thing with, like, even the youth prison up in northern Wisconsin. If the offenders are from Milwaukee County and they're up in northern Wisconsin cut off from family and friends, it's not good for them. So there are problems like that that we dealt with 15 years ago and said, this is not the way we want to do things. But the alternative is, do you want to build a new prison for how many millions of dollars?
$350 million. And then when you amortize it with interest costs and everything else. Just one other point on this topic, JR. The governor has not yet been explicit on where he is on our state's prison future. Yes, he signed the bill for planning money to possibly, but he's not been explicit. He's let Schimmel be the point man on this issue. Fair statement?
I think so. And, you know, and We still have, we're going to go to a regional system again with youth prisons. They're not cited yet, right? There's a process that's going to happen
counties.
With that.
Yep.
That still has to come. So there's a lot of moving pieces with corrections. And don't forget, for Democrats, they're using the problems at corrections to say there's something amiss with how Governor Walker is running the state.
Yeah.
There are problems there at the youth prisons. We just had the story last week about even the body cameras being late in these max security prisons. This is indicative of a bigger problem of mismanagement that Democrats want to nail Scott Walker on when it comes to correction system.
Right. Okay. New subject. The president announced his choice for the U.S. Supreme Court on Monday. It elicited the following response from Senator Baldwin, Democratic Senator Baldwin, yesterday. She said, "I'm not going to vote for him." Her early statement was, "People need an independent justice who will not overturn the law of the land on women's health care for people with pre-existing conditions and the constitutional rights and freedoms of all Americans." Help me clarify, JR. As Ron Johnson said, he's definitely going to vote for Mr. Kavanaugh.
I don't think the words "I will vote for" have come out of his mouth, but we're all pretty sure he's going to vote for Kavanaugh.
His statement, "A Supreme Court justice ought to be a judge, not a super legislator. To my understanding, Judge Brett Kavanaugh fits that description." No surprises there.
No. What's interesting to me is that nationally you're seeing this debate about red state Democrats in the Senate and what should they do when it comes to the nomination of Kavanaugh. The thing about Wisconsin, though, is we're not North Dakota, where President Trump won by 25 or 35 points, some crazy.
More than 20.
We're not West Virginia. We're not Missouri. We're not Indiana. President Trump won Wisconsin by less than 23,000 votes, a plurality of 47.2%. His numbers are upside down in Wisconsin for his job approval. There's not the pressure that I can pick up here on a Tammy Baldwin like there is on a Heitkamp, Manchin, Donnelly, Klaskel, okay? Klaskel. So I get the impression talking to people that, yes, people are, you know, Republicans are trying to target Tammy Baldwin about voting no on Kavanaugh. I've seen people say, well, she didn't even bother to read all those decisions. This was too quick of an announcement. Both Kevin Nicholson and Leah Vukmir have talked about, you know, her doing this, a need for more Republicans to confirm Trump's picks.
Yeah.
To me, in talking to people, this is just a base issue. So if you are a core Republican base voter, you may get a little extra juice about voting in November because of this situation. If you're a Democrat, you may get a little extra juice to go vote because Baldwin's voting no on a Trump pick. With a voter in the middle, I don't see a political price for Baldwin. The people I've talked to so far about this, I mean, it could change, but right now they're not seeing a big problem for her being an opponent of a Trump pick.
Yeah, okay, I agree. I added this last topic, JR, because in the wake of the school shootings, there was debate, obviously, in the Capitol about do we need new gun laws? The answer was no. However, let's come up with $100 million to fund school safety grants. So Attorney General Schimmel, flanked by Republican legislators and literally dozens of officials from local school districts, has now handed out the grants. Let's just quickly look at the 10 largest grants. Madison, $993,000. Kenosha, $888,000. Green Bay, $835,000. Appleton, $767,000. Waukesha, $518,000. And Nina, $267,000. It's interesting. Milwaukee Public Schools has asked for $3.14 million, and that's not yet been announced. I am struck, though, every time the Department of Justice announces a new round of school safety grants, there's a press conference, there's photo ops with legislators and school district officials. That has nothing to do with Mr. Schimmel's campaign.
It has everything to do with it. I mean, yeah, you know, look, they're going to say they're announcing the news, but the reality is that these are the good things that government does, right? So, like, if you're a politician, I don't care what party you're from, what you're running for, if you have the chance to announce money for a local district, a local government, a local project, you are going to do it. This is where you say, look, here are the things that I can do for you. I mean, it's basic politics 101.
And also, just to PS on this subject, I did look up 750 schools or school districts applied. Hundreds of private schools, church-run schools applied. So just real quickly, the top three church-run facilities to get money. Green Bay Area Catholic Schools, $153,990. $100,000 to St. Mary's Catholic Schools in Nena, and $82,100 in Chippewa Falls Catholic Schools. Annie Gaylor of the Freedom from Religion Foundation does not like that money going to private schools.
No, and there's still going to be money left over from the $100 million they originally had allocated. So the question becomes, what do you do with that money? And that's kind of the next step for whatever they're going to do.
Right. Okay. Your stock picks.
So rising. So Tammy Baldwin, she announced this week that she raised $4.4 million. That, her campaign says, is a record for a federal candidate from Wisconsin in the second quarter. It comes on top of raising $3.7 million in the first quarter, something like that. She is in a fundraising class all by herself, which offsets the fact that she spent more than she took in the second quarter. Usually for me, that's a red flag with a candidate of spending more than you take in it this early in the year. But Baldwin's up on TV pretty much the entire quarter, driving home messages about her Buy America proposals, about job training, about her own mom's struggles with addiction, and talking about how the opioid issue strikes home for her. She's trying to burn in a message of, you know, Trump voters up in, you know, western northern Wisconsin, I'm a Buy America kind of person. You know, you guys who struggled with opioid stuff, I feel your pain. So she's doing that. On top of all that stuff, you know, Kevin Nicholson announced more than a million raised. That tells you the gap there is financially between what she's doing and what the field is. Now, we have not seen Leah Vukmir's numbers yet, but the fact that Nicholson put us out a couple days ago, I haven't heard from Vukmir yet, tells me and others that she didn't top what he raised. If she had bested him, she would have announced that.
Right.
Meanwhile, you have now the hostilities that we've seen from Leah and Kevin, kind of like in debates and stuff. Now it's up on TV, right? We have the Club for Growth hitting Vukmir as just another politician, talking about a letter she wrote to support Bill Cramer and was accused of sexual assault, an open records lawsuit that she reached a settlement for $15,000, things like that that, you know, target the career politician. We also have a pro-Vukmir PAC doing the ad about Kevin Nicholson and his footage from the 2000 Democratic Convention. We knew it was coming.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is
the Democratic National Convention.
Yes, the Nicholson people say, hey, he's always, his first line of every speech is, he was a Democrat and he's converted. So this is not that big a deal. But when I talk to people, the thing they pick on more is the talk about abortion in that ad. In that ad, Kevin Nicholson talks about protecting one's right to choose, those kinds of things. I talk to people and they're like, Republicans can kind of understand, primary voters can understand a conversion. Abortion is a little trickier subject than a primary voter for, you know, Republican circles. This may make it harder for them to trust Nicholson because, hey, you can come back and say, look, you know, I've been endorsed by these anti-abortion groups, I had the support, but that's kind of an issue that might dig a little harder for him than the being a Democrat thing,
and
former Democrat.
Where in Wisconsin will Senator Baldwin and Bernie Sanders be tomorrow?
Eau Claire. That's where kind of his circle of support still is. Now, wait, let's be honest. Democrats are still a little worried about, like, hey, they've been through this before. Big lead in the summer. You know, national tension is elsewhere. Then they find gold lost. So this is not like this thing is sewn up. And I'm still trying to figure out who are the Walker-Baldwin voters out there.
Yeah.
Because they're both leading the polls, right? Yeah. Who are these people? So there are still lots of danger signs. And Democrats tell me, do not sleep on this race. It's not put away. It won't put away until the very, very end, if they do put it away. But she's in a pretty strong position right now.
And I'm scheduled to do candidate interviews next week with both Senator Vukmir and Kevin Nicholson. Okay, next.
So Diane Sykes, so
former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice.
She's on the president's list of 25 picks.
Now on the federal bench in Chicago.
Here's the reality, Steve. She could spend the next two decades plus in the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals and have a very lengthy career as federal appeals court judge. But even though she's on that list of candidates for Trump to pick from for the Supreme Court, her window is probably closed for two reasons. One, she's 60, and that's not to be ageist, but let's be honest now. Presidents aren't looking for somebody in the court for two decades. They want, can we get three decades out of you?
Isn't Mr. Kavanaugh the nominee? 53. Go ahead, excuse me.
Number two, she has a very long track record now. I mean, at one point, that was like a kind of a calling card for nominees, right? The experience card. Now, it provides fodder for opponents, and that's like the one Kavanaugh thing, right? They're talking about how much material there is to go over Democrats to pick apart for stuff. It seems like the ideal candidate now for Supreme Court is somebody in his or her 50s who's got experience but not too much, doesn't much, not much of a paper trail. You know, Sykes, again, she's going to be an influential judge for a long time in the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, but I think that window of the Supreme Court, it maybe is closed on her.
I think that's a very fair mix. Falling.
So Marquette, we talked about the McAdams decision last week a little bit, but what's interesting to see is in the fallout, Marquette's become a whipping boy for conservatives about the free speech issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge issue nationally on campuses about the perception from conservatives that they're shutting down conservative thought. And here it's become Marquette's getting this kind of black eye from this and being held up as something that even though the Supreme Court ruled in favor of McAdams, it was a free speech issue, that they're holding on to the idea this is an employment law thing. And the they don't get it, kind of argue for conservatives, and they kind of get beat up a little bit.
Yeah, okay. Let's look at one thing next week, JR. We got a couple seconds remaining. The next Marquette poll comes out.
Wednesday?
In June, the Marquette poll took out as Democratic candidate Annie Gronick and Representative Dana Walks.
That and the path to get the nomination was not there anymore for him.
Right. Do you think we'll see any other potential drops in the wake of the next MU poll?
I've not picked up anything about that because it's so close to the primary. Why would you at this point? You know, if you don't have the money, you don't get the money. So I don't think that's going to happen. Other than to watch fundraising numbers.
Yes.
Here it is, Friday morning. I don't have Governor Walker's yet.
Right.
So
you don't have Governor Walker's. You don't have Leah Vukmir's. So we'll certainly have those.
Tony Evers. I don't have Malin Mitchell.
All of which we'll have in their next rewind.
So, but what's the watch with that? Is it where is Walker fundraising pace wise versus 4 years ago? Has there been a fatigue with his donor base a little bit? And then two, we saw Kelda with $650,000 for 6 months. How much of that is her money? And where is everybody else? It all spends the same in the end, but how much do they have to go in that 3-4 week sprint of TV we talked about that could decide that primary?
Reasons to watch next Rewind. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for July 1-3.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.